Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, man. It's raining outside. Just looking out the window, man. Saying, see the whole city. What if the world were one color? What kind of world would it be? Everybody the same color, Stevie Wonder would see. What if Abraham Lincoln never freed the slaves? What if weed was legal? I had trees for days. What if Lil Wayne cup was filled with Kool-Aid? LL was a nerd, he wasn't really Cool J. What if the NRA changed all the gun laws? And no one could buy guns out the gun store. What if Kevin Hart was like 6 feet tall? It probably wouldn't be funny at all. Everybody rocking gold cause it's Trinidad James. But what if this guy had on fake gold chains? What if the black man could swim and white man could jump? What if the Reebok never made the pump? What if Kobe and Shaq never had beef? Cause probably had 10 rings apiece. What if O.J. Simpson would've fit that glove? What if Whitney Houston would've never did drugs? What if Sean Poe would never shot the gun in the club? What if the homie Eazy-E would've wore that glove? What if the Crips wore red, the Bloods wore blue? What if Dr. Martin Luther King's dreams came true? What if Chris and Rihanna never had that fight? Shooter never checked his phone, it would've been a good night. It's what if. Everybody talking what if. I'm in the crib just smoking my piff. Everybody talking what if. If this was the fifth, then we'd all be drunk. Everybody talking what if. I'm in the crib just smoking my piff. Everybody talking what if. If this was the fifth, then we'd all be drunk. Yeah, man. Just chilling in the crib, you know. Got the Ciroc on the rocks. Look like the sun coming out, man. Yeah. Would it be a mess? Never got knocked by the feds. What if Black Just never got shot in the leg? What if LeBron played Jordan in his prime? Both would probably be dunking from the free line. But there was no more coke in Washington Heights. What if Django was directed by Spike? What if Trayvon was a white kid with a hoodie on? Rest in peace to all niggas in the hood that's gone. What if Dougie Fresh never met Slick at the party? Then hip-hop wouldn't have had no la-di-da-di. What if niggas stopped making those Air Force Ones? I be all f***ed up, I love my Air Force Sons. What if Trigger stopped itching? No more killing in the hood. What if niggas stopped snitching? What if Kendrick Lamar never kicked that verse? Would the hip-hop game be better or worse? It's what if. Everybody talking what if. I'm in the crib just smoking my piff. Everybody talking what if. If this was the fifth, then we'd all be drunk. Everybody talking what if. I'm in the crib just smoking my piff. Everybody talking what if. If this was the fifth, then we'd all be drunk.
Peace and blessings, and welcome to Flavor Marlex Radio. Today I'm doing a special show. It is, in my opinion, and those that are in my circle, we talk about this frequently, but we think that and believe that and feel that many of our communities across the United States are in the state of emergency, and it's an alert. And I think that as I support a variety of creative souls out there, I think about it a lot. You know, what if? You know, what if stories were told differently? What if the emphasis was different on what we're putting out there? What if parents stepped up and were parents? What if people were really ready to have children? What if there weren't guns? What if there weren't harsh and ugly words? What would the world be like? And so I thought that it was appropriate to start out today's show with What If by Fredro Starr from Onyx, and who's also a part of Monarchy Records, Spectrum Music Group that I'm a part of. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. This is important to me. It's something that I feel needs to be addressed. I am hoping that many of the people that have said that they wanted to be a part of the show will actually call in. And I hope that there are many of you out there listening to this show live. I am going to open up the phone lines definitely for you to call in and participate if you're wanting to do so. The call-in number is 347-857-1189. The one thing that I am going to ask is that you keep it respectful. I think that there are many issues that could come up during this show, and they're all going to be very, very valid. And at the end of the show, I'm hoping that we are able to bring it back in, really identify some things that we can work on as individuals, as groups of people in our own communities, and even people who come together online, which is how many of us have come to know each other. So again, welcome to Flava Marlex Radio for SEA, State of Emergency Alert. I want to bring in Quiet Storm of Spoken Word out of North Carolina, so let me click on his link. Welcome to the show, Quiet Storm.
Hey, how's it going?
Very, very good. Hold on a minute. I'm going to bring in J.C. Cage also. Welcome to the show, J.C. Cage.
Good afternoon, Flav. How you doing, Quiet Storm?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Well, I think, you know, as I was saying early, as I started out the show, kind of why I feel it's really, really important, and in a sense, I want to address the creative community, but it's not necessarily just geared towards those that are creative souls, such as yourselves, gentlemen, because this affects everybody. But I think about it a lot, and Jace, you and I talk about this frequently, the power of art and what type of influence it has on ourselves, you know, and especially the type of impact it has on our youth. And so you and I kind of came up with this idea at the last minute because of shootings that are taking place in our own community and shootings that have taken place actually within a matter of blocks from where both you and I have lived right now. And so I'm just going to ask you, Jace, to say a few things, and then I want to talk to Quiet Storm and his feelings around this subject and his passion of what he advocates and is an activist against.
Okay, no problem. First of all, Lady Flava, I want to thank you again for being more than just an advocate for art, more about being an advocate for humanity. And I think that's the bigger issue with this conversation that we're having today. So, you know, the whole SEA thing, yeah, it's a Seattle, you know, moniker or whatever, and it's tied to that. But I think it's a lot bigger than that. You know, there's a lot of violence that's happening with our youth, and we're losing a lot of our youth. We're losing a lot of our future. And so, you know, the conversation that you and I were having was basically about the violence and the lack of love and the lack of unity and the lack of motivation and the lack of celebrating greatness in our youth. And I think that it was something that I think a lot of people are kind of fed up about. And so you and I talked about it, and, you know, the deaths that are happening here in Seattle are just reflective of the deaths that are happening around the country, from North Carolina to Chicago. I just left San Francisco. A facility in San Francisco, talk to some young people. And I think it's very important that they hear our voices more than just seeing our faces on TV or hearing us on the radio or reading about us in a magazine. I think it's very, very important that they know that there's some people out here that actually give a damn about their futures and have a vested interest. And it doesn't have to just be because they're family of mine or family of yours or they're my children or your children. And I think the community has lost a little bit of that voice that speaks to some of these things that are bigger than just a celebration of music or art or fashion or whatever. We're losing people behind the things that we used to celebrate and the things that we used to use to bring us together. So, you know, you and I talked and you said without question, you would have a conversation and invite those who feel the same way about having a voice in this fight of survival. And the survival is bigger than just, like I said, about mine and yours. It's about all of us. And, you know, we got a lot of young people who need to know that everybody is not afraid to speak out. Everybody is not going with the status quo or popular mentality of, you know, just do what you want and it doesn't affect me and it doesn't matter. It all matters. It all matters because one of these days we're all going to be physically not here, and the legacy that we leave is so important. So this is what this conversation for me is really about, state of emergency alert. Like, let's get on it. Let's stop wasting time and wasting energy, and let's make some moves and make some impact. Hopefully we can get a collective of people like those. They get a collective of gangsters. They get a collective of drug dealers. They get a collective of strippers. They get a collective of all these other things. So let's get a collective of conscious people who do some things and aren't scared to say I'm conscious and aren't scared to say, yeah, I'm doing this purposely, and aren't scared to say I disagree with that. And we build ways where those young people that are doing greatness are celebrated, just like we spend a lot of time with those young people who are troubled. And so for me, this is what this is all about.
Well, I appreciate you being part of this, and I appreciate you kind of being the catalyst in the conversation that you and I had, Jace, in the reason behind, you know, me scheduling this particular show. And I sense with some of the feedback that I have received that we may have to do maybe a series of these. Maybe once a month we can gather here on Flava Marlex Radio and, you know, just throw out some ideas, you know, continue to work on finding those solutions, you know, supporting each other in, you know, the movements that we may be able to create stemming off of this particular show and other things. And as I prepare and have more time, you know, I felt it was an urgent matter to address, and that's why I kind of threw this show together. Even though I had a few days, I still, you know, kind of threw it together, maybe at the last minute, but I'm good, and I'm known for doing that. But I do want to be able to invite a variety of people. We're here in Seattle, Washington, and we are being affected right now by gun violence. But, you know, we know that it is stretching across the nation, and many, many communities are being affected by not only just gun violence, but as you will hear from Quiet Storm, you know, he will speak on child abuse and abuse against women and abuse against, you know, all people. And so, you know, I want to allow him to step to the mic right now. Introduce yourself, Quiet Storm, and give us a brief background on your passion, what you advocate and are an activist for.
Okay. I am Quiet Storm of Spoken Word, and I have been a spoken word artist since late 2006, early 2007. And ever since I have stepped on the scene, one of the things I've always let people know is that I'm an advocate against all forms of abuse. And I focus on domestic violence because my theory or my belief is domestic violence against women is the catalyst for the domino effect for all other forms of abuse. Now, some may not see it like that, but that really doesn't matter to me because just from my life observations from my childhood, being that I am an overcomer of child abuse myself, the behaviors that I've seen, the mentality that I've come across when it comes to abuse, I just see that the most powerful part of that cycle or that circle of abuse is abuse against women. Because the one thing most of us do know is that women, they are the originators of life when it comes to the biological conception of life. They are the nurturers, they're the caregivers. So if the women are bruised and damaged and twisted mentally and emotionally, and they inflict that upon the children, then children, 'cause what we do as human beings is we generally tend to take on the characteristics of the most important people in our lives, mainly being our parents, and we take on the characteristics of our surroundings. So, therefore, you have that child that's going to take that madness, that twisted mentality and spiritual crap that's being dealt on to them, they're going to take it into their adolescence, into their adult life, and then they're going to end up displaying certain behaviors, not even realizing or knowing why they are doing it. But it's almost like it becomes a instinctive or a habit, so to speak. So then with that madness, you got all this crap that's in society right now because of the destructive mentality that has been fed to generations of people as far as, let's say, my grandparents' generation, my parents' generation, on to my generation, now my children's generation. All of this crap that's on reality TV where disrespect is something that's cheered, revered. You have these destructive reality shows that have some of the highest ratings on television. So now this is the accepted norm. If a man cusses a woman out and calls a bitch and tells her that she's not worth his time, then that's almost something that's celebrated. And with that being the case, our society is on this downward spiral that is very disturbing to me. And I'm very much concerned about the condition of, again, my parents' generation, my generation, my children's generation, because, of course, my children's generation, say your children, your grandchildren's generation, they are going to be the ones to carry on after we have passed on.
So right.
My thing is, I don't know what the condition of the world is going to be, let's say, 20, 30 years from now.
Well, and I appreciate what you're saying, Quiet Storm, and I totally hear you on that, because I'm disturbed by the things that has become so popular on TV also. I'm disturbed by some of the music that is so accepted, and, you know, women being called bitches and hoes and all of that, that's not okay. That's not acceptable in my book. I would never want a man to address one of my children in that fashion or my granddaughters in that fashion. I don't like the N-word being thrown around. I think that we are coming up in a time where there is so much that is acceptable. And as you spoke, I mean, I'm older than you, Quiet Storm, but, you know, we came up in a time where certain things was not acceptable to be said, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I think about the fact of, you know, mouths being washed out with soap and, you know, this, that, and the other, you know, and even in my own home, you know, stupid and retarded, things like that. That was a bad word. And so my mother definitely addressed those issues, you know, with us. The interesting thing is that Jace and I both came from two parents' homes. And Jace and I addressed that a lot in our conversations, how blessed we are in how we were raised. And that our parents were like pillars of the community here in Seattle in different ways. And very, very respected. And so sometimes for us, living up to the standards of what our parents put before us as elders is sometimes it's humbling to try to live up towards, and it's challenging, you know, especially in the times that we are living in. But before I go any further, my dear friends, I need to bring in somebody else. And this is somebody who I consider my family. This is somebody who I love with all my heart. I actually have not talked to him in a long, long time, so I'm going to try very hard not to cry. But I'm proud to have Sankara Dredon join us on this particular show, and all of the things that he is working on out there in Springfield, Illinois. So welcome to the show, Sankara.
Hey, how you doing, Flavor? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, bro?
I'm okay. We're like old times again.
I know, it's funny because
the two of you,
you know, I guess all of us kind of came to know each other around the same time right here on Blog Talk Radio. As you, Quiet Storm, and Sankara, and Son of Man, and many, many others, you know, kind of did the spoken word circuit, and, you know, Sankara was part of doing his own Blog Talk Radio show with Son of Man. So it is kind of interesting that both of you are on the show today. But, okay, I'm going to go ahead. I know you're going by all these different names, Sankara, but that's what I have to call you, is Sankara, you know, so that's just what it's going to be. But tell us about, you know, what you're a part of out there in Springfield and why you got involved.
Oh, well, you know, I've always been involved actively in a lot of community issues. I've been wanting to get involved in different things up here in Springfield. I was hesitant to because I actually didn't want to be here. But, you know, I started noticing a lot of different things that was affecting the community, and particularly, you know, the violence. And they have finally, I worked with Springfield Urban League in another capacity at first. I was teaching four classes through the Urban League, anger management and how to be a decent father and things like that. And then we got funded for the ceasefire program that I knew was greatly needed because of the consistency of the violence that's happening here. You know, it's not easy for me to balance a lot of things because you all know, you know, we ran across a lot of people on these shows over the years that, you know, they have this organization and this, and, you know, and it's hard for you to buy into everything that you hear. And I didn't want to buy into it initially, what the Cure of Violence ceasefire thing was about, until I went to Chicago and trained, and then I understood the level of which they taken this thing. Now, that's why they don't really even call it ceasefire anymore. They call it Cure of Violence as a health approach. Because the creator of ceasefire, Dr. Gary Slutkin, he's an epidemiologist, and he had discovered that the violence in Chicago mimicked the same thing as many epidemics, such as tuberculosis, even AIDS for that matter. And he took that approach with it, and I could sort of see that by looking at it. If you think about women when they're going to get, you know, tests for cancer and things like that, early detection. What's early detection with a child is leaning towards getting violent, you know, targets at school, smoking weed, run away from home. These things become complicit with what you see them once they become adults or young adults, when they start doing these things based upon their upbringing in that early detection, what's going on in their life, you know. And a lot of people say, well, my kid not going to be like this or that. And I tell them, you know, it's a lot of people in Texas on death row right now. They know they were serial killers, and they killed a few people. So you'll never know where a person's head at if you don't detect it early and start treating it. And that's what we're doing up here in Springfield. I actually wrote a program called Risk Camp, Raising Individual Social Knowledge, which I bring a lot of the kids together for 5 weeks, 2 days a week, 2 hours. And we take them through a rigorous training camp, a mental training camp that with anger management, cognitive behavior thinking, problem solving. We deal with a bunch of issues as well as we, you know, have lax time and movie nights and things like that. And it's been working. You know, we can't stop it all, but we can reduce it because we've been having an eight ball right now. We just had a shooting actually 40 feet away from where I'm sitting at right now, just within 30 minutes ago. And that's why I was late calling in.
Right.
You know. Yeah, right next to my office. It was just a shooting right out there. I pretty much seen the guys run away from it. You know, I'm just standing there shocked. But this is what's going on. You know, it's the consistency of the violence here that we have to attack. And my job is to go out in the community and find these high-risk individuals that's involved in these activities and try to get, you know, rear them towards getting involved in our program, trying to find them something to do over the summer besides shoot at each other and things like that. And it's a hard task. I mean, you got to be out there with them. You never know if they might be wanted by somebody else and you get caught in the line of fire. So it's not an easy go at this point.
No, I understand that. And, you know, I have so much respect for what it is that you're doing, Sankara. And if you don't mind, I think it's important to kind of just identify this about you and your life. For those of you that don't know Sankara Dredon, Sankofa, whatever, you know, Dre, whatever name you might know him by, the Hitman from back in like 2007, 2008, was Son of Man. He actually did time, you know, in prison. And he went in as a teenager and he came out as an adult. And you know, it was gang related and he lost a lot of his childhood behind bars. But while he was locked up, he still found a way of reaching those outside, and, you know, speaking on issues. And this man has a way of using words to tell a story and make you stop and think. And so I hope you don't mind me bringing that up, Sankara.
Oh, no, I don't have a problem with that. I tell that, you know, when I teach my classes, I don't have a problem with discussing that with them because they're pretty close to experiencing the same thing. But the whole difference is everybody don't come out the same, you know.
Right.
With all respects to you know, the authorities or whatever, but that place is not designed to rehabilitate you, and it's up to the individual. And if you don't take those, you know, steps, you know, you're going to wind up back in there. You're going to wind up dead. And I tell a lot of guys that because, you know, that's one of my motivations. I go on IDOC.com in Illinois, and I look up some of the young guys who was incarcerated as teens with me, and I see some of them got natural life. Don't got right back out of jail and killed somebody else, and now they got natural life without parole, and I see the defeatism in their face. And that's enough to tell me that, you know, life, whatever happens on this side of it is beautiful in comparison to that, you know. And that's, I have a motto with the class, you know, that I teach, and even brothers in the community. I tell them, their worst day on the street is better than your best day in a penitentiary. And that's just realistic. I mean, you don't want to do that, you know. And I like it because it keeps me on my toes. I kind of fell off a little bit after, you know, things didn't go all the way through with me and Son of Man was trying to do when I was, you know, trying to get custody of my son, so I really wasn't active with doing anything. And just to show people that's even doing volunteer work with organizations and things like that, just to get out there and try to help the community, that's what they should be doing. I volunteered for a year and a half with the Urban League on my own dime, driving to little small towns and surrounding areas, teaching class to young guys, and then it finally came through for it. They made me the lead outreach worker with benefits and a contract for the next couple of years. So it pays off. You know, it really pays off when you put your effort towards something and they recognize that in me, and I appreciate that for them.
Lady Flavor,
well,
can I come in a little bit? Because I'm just over here shaking my head and yeah, that's right, and all of that. And then, Carl, my name is J.C. Cage. I'm out of Seattle, Washington. And, you know, I'm really motivated by listening to your story because I think sometimes, you know, people always think it's based on circumstance, you know, like they don't have a choice. Like they're stuck in a certain spot and they can't get out. It's like being in a neighborhood and never leaving. And, you know, when I hear you talk, I hear you talk about the things of from spiritual, mental, physical, and the psychological piece that goes along right with it. You know, it's an epidemic. And I think sometimes when people are not personally involved in it, they don't see it as an epidemic. They see it as choices, and they see it as something that, you know, you just decided to do. And, you know, as experiencing some young people myself and working with young people here in Seattle, you know, and them not understanding that, you know, once you get behind those bars or once you get in that system, you become the property of somebody else and they decide everything else for you. And the reality of that not sitting in, to them, I think they need to know that it's just not a local issue. It's just not a personal issue, but it's a community issue. And, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, you know, I'm listening to you talk about the cure violence and risk and being in Springfield and your involvement in Chicago or Chi-Rac, as they call it, you know, almost proudly. And it's like when more young people are dying in the inner city than are dying at a quote-unquote in war, I think people need to really take a little time out and be involved. And yeah, there's risk in it. Yeah, you might be standing next to somebody, like you said, that people might shoot at. So you have to have a pulse on what's going on in the neighborhood and also have a pulse what's going on, you know, in the community at large. And I just think it's so important that, you know, people understand that this is bigger than just, you know, hey, man, I want to be a gangster, or, hey, I want to be a hustler, or, hey, I want to be this, or, hey, I want to be that. A lot of times it's the disconnection of the spirituality, of the understanding what's going on, of being in a place of, you know, my family's from Richmond, California, you know, and so I got to see a lot of things that, you know, might not happen here in Seattle, but the mentality is what is very important. I think it needs to be addressed a lot more than people are talking about. And I think it's also time that we start celebrating some of these young people that have made successes like yourself, that have gotten themselves out of situations where, you know, they could have decided to get out and kill again or continue to do it. And, you know, we need to find ways to address it and attack it. And I like that word attack because it's not a passive issue. You can't sit back and pray it away. You actually have to be involved. And so I just wanted to chime in on that because it's very important.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. So, you know, I mean, and I appreciate the three of you, you know, because you come from different angles. You know, you come from different backgrounds. And everything that you could tell as your own personal stories to things that are happening in your own community, you know, representing North Carolina, Illinois, and, you know, Washington, you know, on the line right now. We can all tell you a different story, but the core, and I kind of liked what Sankara, you know, you said it because I think about what's taking place right now as a disease in a sense, as something that's infesting our psyche, our bodies, our families, our communities, and I think that we need to find the cure, you know, to bringing it back to a place where I do believe existed once upon a time in for many people, not all people, of course, but for many people. And I'm blessed to say that I'm one of them, where life made sense, where I was allowed to be a child, where I came up in a safe home, where I was so loved. And I was in a sense honored as a child of my parents. And, you know, to be able to witness my parents reaching out into the community, you know, as a minister, my father being a minister, to my mother having a background and being a missionary, you know, and seeing them bring children into my home and all of this coming up and helping people within the community and helping people within the church, and my godmother doing the same. I believe that, I really believe this in my heart and soul, that we can, whether it's one child at a time, whether it is one family at a time, I think that we can take it back. Of course, we could go into this historical thing, right, generational thing, which goes back many, many generations of why things take place. And I think that's important to also identify. But at the same time, I think that we need to find those solutions. And I appreciate you again, all for being here, you know, and having this conversation. When Jason and I decided to do this show, you know, and I put together the invite, I started getting some really, really interesting responses, from political views to, of course, the plight of the African American, you know, community and all of that. And for those of you that don't know, it's funny to me when sometimes people don't realize I'm actually Japanese and German, you know, but I was raised in the Black community here in Seattle. And it is a community that I have embraced my whole life. And so, you know, just for my personal opinion, I think that it all starts at home. I really, really do. I think that it starts that minute that men and women choose to lay down and spread their legs and have children. And I think that a lot of times in that moment of lust, people don't realize that a child could come out of that. And how much do you really want to even be attached to that person you had that moment with? children are being born, you know, to mothers and situations that are struggling. And I think about myself, you know, I was a young mother myself. And, you know, did I really think about what kind of life I could provide my oldest daughter at that moment? I mean, I was with her father for 3 years, so it wasn't like something that just happened, you know, overnight or whatever. I was in a long time relationship with him. But was I prepared to be a mom? And did I realize that I was going to end up being a single mom when he and I both decided to have her, and all of that? And the blessing for me is that I had an amazing support system. But there are a lot of mothers that are having children who are not with the fathers of their children, and they don't have that support system. And so I think it just really, really kind of, a lot of it starts at home with the foundations that we bring our children up with. I think that children are exposed to way more things than they should be. And, you know, when I was a kid, you know, there was censorship from Al Green's music, you know, from the Four Tops music when I was coming up. You know, we were sneaking to listen to that, to thinking about the music that's being created now and what children are exposed to now. So I think about those type of things, especially when it comes to, you know, being somebody who's on the radio, somebody who supports independent artists, and, you know, and thinking about what really works for me in my own world and what I try to keep safe when it comes to now my grandchildren, since my youngest is going on 27. And so does anybody care to chime in on my thoughts on that?
Well, when it comes to the family dynamic, you are absolutely right about that. It does start at home, because even with me coming from that abusive background, there are a lot of values that both my parents did instill in me, and my parents are still together to this day. And for some people who I've had the opportunity to sit down with and tell my history to, they kind of look at me with a confused face, because as much as I talk about what I went through at the hands of my parents when it comes to the abuse, I also give them credit for what they did that is the basis, most of the basis of who I am today. They taught me to say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, excuse me, thank you, please. They really kept a watch over me as far as the type of people I hung out with, what I watched on TV, what I listened to on the radio, the words that came out of my mouth. So they were very instrumental in that, because here it is, I'm 45, and I still say, please, thank you, ma'am, sir. And that's just an automatic thing for me. I don't even have to think about it. So, again, just reiterating on what you were saying, it does start at home. And what's happened now is one of the things that I recall as far as being a parent myself is you have the legal system that has basically disarmed us as far as our rights as parents, as far as what we can say and do to our children, because when they go to the public school system, they're informed that, you know, parents can't do this or parents can't do that, or if they do, you have the right to call 911 or you have the right to call DSS. And then next thing you know, you have the government involved in your home and how you raise your children. And then they step in and basically tell you, okay, you can't say or do certain things when it comes to your children. So with that being the case, then you have the family dynamic that's been compromised, because, you know, now here it is, you have the government who really doesn't give a flip about what goes on when it comes to a parent trying to raise their children in the right way, because they want to go ahead and flex their authoritative muscle and then control how things are going on in your home So then you have to, because I had the experience myself with my children. My ex-wife and I, we adopted our children. So they were 4 and 6 when we got them. So I had to deal with the Department of Social Services quite a bit throughout the years. So it's like you have to go ahead and straddle that fence, so to speak. But even in straddling that fence, I let my children know straight up, I'm like, look, if you want to stay in this house and you want to have us as parents, then this is how things are going to go. And as much as I love my children, I also told them, I said, look, if you go ahead and pick up the phone one day and decide to call 911 or DSS and get them involved, then you can pack your bags and you can leave. Because I was not about to go down for anybody. But
right.
And that may seem cold to some people, but with everything that you have to do as a parent when it comes to the time that you have to sacrifice, especially when you get the calls from the teachers and saying that, okay, we need to have a meeting at school because there's a situation where your child, they're not grasping the material like they should, or they're causing disciplinary issues in the classroom, they're disrupting the classroom. Okay, that's time you have to take off from your job. You go in. You meet with them. Or if they have an individual educational plan, or IEP, as it's known here in North Carolina, you have to take off time from your job. You go and you sit in on the meetings and you chime in on what you think the format should be as far as how your child is taught this material or that material. So with all of that, and then you have a child who comes across with this attitude of being unappreciative or feeling like they're just so entitled, it wears on you. And then you kind of sit back and you begin to contemplate, okay, did I make the right decision in doing this? And that's a totally different dynamic, in my opinion, than, say, someone who's a biological parent.
Sure.
And so with that right there, as far as my experience, it was rewarding and frustrating. I'll just put it there. Because of the fact that, again, we had to deal with this government organization. And they came in and they peeped in and they asked these questions and they wanted to make sure that we did things a certain way. And so when it comes to their family dynamic, and the involvement of these different entities, especially with the government, basically the rug has been swept from under us as parents, and it's very difficult to, at least in 2014, it's very difficult to parent the proper way.
I definitely understand the challenges when it comes to the government and how they have stepped up and stepped into how we, parent our children, and that's so challenging. And the sad thing is, somebody who has, worked social services as a domestic violence advocate and as a youth advocate and a homeless advocate, I definitely understand why the government needs to be involved, because there are cases, as we might circulate, on social networks about stories of neglect and abuse. And where the social services did not step in and save children and all of that. Where's the balance in it? I don't know. And I think that is something, that needs to be a balance, because you're right. Parents' rights are taken away. Children can claim all kinds of things. I mean, we've seen the stories of, fathers going to prison because their daughters claimed rape on them, which was, because they were mad because they couldn't go to a party or something, and all of that. And so,
one of the things, I know you got somebody coming in. One of the things I wanted to really say, because you asked a question about how do we feel about what you said, and You know, like I had left San Francisco, went to a juvenile youth facility in San Francisco out there in Twin Peaks. The opportunity was made by a great young lady who's doing some work. She has her master's degree, and her name is Mad Lines, and she's just doing some fabulous work. But one of the topic of my visit to the facility was the unseen enemy. It's the things that you don't always see. It's the things you don't always touch. And I think Quiet Storm is absolutely right when he talks about the abuse. He talks about how the devaluing of the mother plays a big role in the devaluing of the community, because those are the queens. Those are the mothers. That's where we come through. I asked a question in there. I said, everybody talks crazy to these women, but who all would be here without no woman? Nobody.
Right.
So I think it plays such a strong role. And, you know, we used to have songs. There always was a balance. I heard you use the word balance. And there always used to be a balance. When I came up in hip-hop, you know, I'm active in hip-hop since 1984. And when I came up in hip-hop, you know, there was a balance to the party and the bullshit, if you will. There was a consciousness. There was a social consciousness. There was a responsibility. There was a voice to it. And it just didn't speak to having fun and, you know, partying and saying, I can do what I want. It was like, yeah, you can do what you want, but you're also held responsible to those that support you. And it's very interesting today that as soon as you tell somebody that they're held to a standard of those that support them, they say, I can do what I want. I'm not held to nobody. And I always like to say this, Flav, you know this, but nobody succeeds or fails by themselves. Nobody lives on this planet by themselves.
Right.
So there's a responsibility that we have to each other to continue life. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, I'm going, yeah, historical plays a role. Because like Carl was saying about this epidemic, things start from somewhere. Nothing starts from nothing. Something
right.
comes from something. We need to know exactly where that comes from so we can deal with it. You know, and I'm getting really excited about this and passionate about this because I'm very passionate about this. You know, there's a black young male youth that dies every 28 hours in America, and it's not been called an epidemic yet. You know, crack did the same thing. Crack wasn't an epidemic until it got to suburbia. And, you know, when it was in the urban community, people didn't really talk so much about it. And, you know, people are individuals. People are individuals. But policies and institutions is what affect us on a widespread way. And I think we need to start dealing with some of these policies. When we're talking about education, the miseducation of young people, black and brown people in America, is ridiculous when you talk about numbers, when you talk about housing, when you talk about health, when you talk about fair wages. All that plays a part in the psychology of a person that understands value. So it's easy for the media now to desensitize us to the value of us as individual or as people and say you have to have material. Some people only quantify with numbers and material items. They don't have nothing else to talk about because they don't have – to be honest, they're not worth it. And so they got to say, I got money in my pocket. I drive this car. I got this clothes. I got 12 women. Yeah, because that's the only way you can quantify. And, you know, I'm not mad at none of these things because some of them are necessities. We need money to live. We need housing. You know, we need to get around. We need to eat. You know, we need all these things. But at the same time, at what value? Is it the value of losing a generation? And we're watching generation die, and people are just going to go, well, you know, he had a couple dollars in his pocket before he died, you know. Yeah, he went to prison for 20 years, but he was out here hustling, you know. Yeah, she was the prettiest girl in the neighborhood, but now she's been ran through by the time she's 18 years old, and she has no back. So it's like we got to get back to, as a community of people, as a humanity of people, on this scale about, what is value? And I think that for me plays a very, very important part to where the next step goes, because these young people see that the only time we talk about them is when they're in trouble. The only time we want to get with them is when they're doing something wrong. Who's celebrating these young geniuses? Who's celebrating these young people that are doing some great things, these young innovators? Who's doing that on a consistent basis? There's no tours around celebrating youth. There's stuff around stopping violence, and I think that's important. But I also think it's important with organizations that have been around for years and have been supported, like the churches. I think the churches are awful quiet, and I wonder why. You know, is it just, you know, now we tithe? But what if that tithe mean? How many churches are going to? I heard a story recently about a church, and this moved me, about a church that was giving their congregation loans if they had ideas for businesses, not just come and drop something in the bucket, but let me give that back. How many churches are making sure that there is some? And I understand they do a lot of work, so I don't want people to say, why are you railing on churches? But what I'm saying is they have a lot of power. They have a lot of influence in these communities, because a lot of these mega churches are in the middle of the neighborhoods where there's a lot of destruction. And, you know, I understand marching, but I'm more about action. You know, I do work, too, that I call the street church, you know, and that's going out and talking with these young people that everybody's scared of. Like, we're scared of our youth now. That is totally insane to me, you know. And I just, like I always like to say, there's rules. There's rules to this shit, and there's rules to all aspects of life. And we need to start making sure that people are held responsible and accountable for the actions they take by the rules that they're playing in this game of life.
I think that was very well said, and I agree with you, you know, on that. And, you know, where do we find, you know, the answers? I do believe that the churches should step up more. I have to tell a story before I bring the next caller in. And I was hoping, you know, that my dear friend and colleague, Lamont Carey, would be able to call in today. But I was talking to him on the phone. And for those of you that don't know Lamont Carey, he is an activist, a spokesperson, a mentor. He goes into the prisons and he does trainings with prisoners on reentering into society. He has provided workshops, you know, for teachers and administrators and schools on how to work with at-risk youth. He has worked with youth across Washington, D.C. on, you know, conflict resolution, and he has spoken to 400, you know, honor students, you know, out there. He has done an array of things when it comes to working in the community out there on the East Coast, but he's based out of Washington, D.C. He also did time in prison, went in as a youth and came out as an adult. But he is so funny because once you have, you know, that that felony, you know, rap on you, it's very difficult to find a job, you know. So talk about, you know, which was mentioned, you know, rehabilitation, that just really doesn't necessarily exist. It takes a certain personality like Sankar Dredon to Lamont Carey to be able to take their skills and their personalities to persevere and to, you know, do the things that they're doing today, you know, to make a difference. But he was telling me last weekend, he went into a church because a minister had reached out to him in the community and asked him to come to the church. And he has spoken at several churches out there in that area. And he chose to sit in the back of the church. And one of the ushers came up to him and told him, no, he couldn't sit in the back of the church. And he was like, but this, you know, this is where I would like to sit. And... so he went outside and he said, well, I'm going to go outside and I'm going to wait, you know, for the more people to come, you know, and then maybe he would be able to sit at the back of the church. And then somebody came out and told him, well, he couldn't stand in front of the church. That wasn't a good look for the minister. And I thought to myself, why does it matter, you know, where he was sitting? You know, the purpose of coming to church is to worship together, you know, to commune, to learn about, you know, the teachings of the Bible and all. Why did it matter? Do you know he ended up leaving?
And I don't blame them for leaving. I really don't blame them for leaving. Not wanting to cut you off or meaning to cut you off, mm-hmm. but you touched on something that is I'm very passionate about because I grew up in the church. I went to church for many years, studied the Bible. I mean, I was very diligent when it comes to going to Wednesday night meetings, Bible study, Sunday school, vacation Bible school. And what I've learned throughout the years is you have so many people who are in different offices in the church who feel like they could do a better job than the pastor, who feel mm-hmm. like they should be the one up there in the pulpit directing how the congregation flows. So when they become ushers or they become deacons, that little position that they have, and I say little, not mm-hmm. meaning to diminish the importance of it, but to also bring the light that it's not that important. They don't have that type of power, but yet still other people have led them to believe that they have that type of power, and because they personally don't like how a situation is or how it looks, then they'll say, well, this doesn't look good as far as how it reflects on the pastor. Now, the pastor didn't tell them that.
Mm-hmm.
The pastor had nothing to do with that. But they take it upon themselves to be a spokesperson for the pastor. And then here it is, you got somebody who may be in a situation where they're completely lost. And they mm-hmm. come to that church body for some type of help, some type of spiritual guidance, and then you turn that person away by the ugliness of your attitude and your spirit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that's part of that's one of the main reasons that there is so much twistiness in our society, because the church itself is so corrupt. There's so much crap that's going on in the church, and the church is supposed to be the spiritual center of the world. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. where we're supposed to get our connection with God. That's where we're supposed to learn about how to commune with God. We're supposed to learn about God's rules and regulations, the love that God has for us, how we're supposed to treat other people. But if this church is twisted, then the rest of society is going to be twisted.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me, that's something that just, it gets me going. It really does.
And definitely,
you know, man, I know you bring somebody in, Flay, but we're talking mm-hmm. now. We move now. Whoever's listening coming in, gonna have to move in now. Because, you know, the thing is that, you know, there's been so many brothers, sisters, and I'm talking about people. When I say brothers and sisters, I ain't necessarily talking about just black folks. I'm talking about people that care about people, that love people. That word love don't get thrown around enough for me no more. You don't hear people tell each other they love them or they honor them or they respect them no more. And, you know, all this cliquish things that's happening, whether it's in the church, whether it's on the street, whether it's in art, whether it's in education, whatever it is, these cliques is killing us. The click. That's blowing us away. That's killing us. That's killing our spirit. That's killing our health. That's killing our mental. That's killing our drive. It's killing us. All these cliques are killing our people. And it seems like the voice, the masses of voices that speak to it get hushed. And it's interesting you tell that story about Lamont, because it's like he came in there with a purpose. He came in there willing to share, but his voice was hushed before he could even get there. He was turned off to it by the energy of the people that, like the brother just said, the pastor might not even told him that, but they took it upon themselves to take away a valuable voice and turn it off to something or to someone that it might have helped that day or that year or the next year or gave them some insight. And people are so quick, based on how they feel about something, to turn it off so somebody else can't get it. And to me, that's very harmful in the future of our young people. You know, when I was in the facility, one of the things that was very interesting was they were telling me how this is maximum security and these young people are this. And I didn't feel nothing but comfort in there, because we actually engaged in a conversation. They talked about the unseen enemy that they were going through. They talked about the things that were challenges of them. And no, I didn't have all day, and I don't have all the answers. I'm not even sitting here trying to act like I do. But the one thing I do know I do is I have passion and compassion for that. And I want to see people start putting some of that fire back into the belly of the community so we can light something up in that, up in this world that, you know, we can put a little light on this journey that we're all about to travel. And, you know, it's very important that our voices are heard because we all don't have to agree. But one thing we have to do is to be able to sustain, balance, and move forward. You know, and it's so important right now. It's so, and we're in 2014, and we're talking about an epidemic that, you know, a lot of people sweep under the rug.
Exactly. Exactly. Caller, thank you so much for holding. Just wait just a few more minutes. Please do not hang up. I'm really excited about this gentleman calling in also because I know that it's about to go in a totally different direction. You know, but Sankara, let me come back to you just right quick. And, you know, Quiet Storm and Jace, you can also chime in, but I'd like to go to Sankara just because he came into my life through his art, through his spoken word. And he actually came and stayed with my family and I in Seattle for about a month back in 2008, and he came back again. So he is definitely a part of my family. But Sankara, what do you feel the creativity of what's taking place in the music community, in the art community, what type of effect do you think that this has had on our young people?
Oh, that effect is terrible. I mean, that's pretty obvious. I actually had an argument with some young kids in the neighborhood when I just walked up to them and told them that LL Cool J was the greatest rapper of all time, and they started laughing at me. And then I told them, I said, I told y'all this on the more of a social perspective, and they was like, what does that mean? You know, social is in society, is in social norms and how we live our lives and how we conduct ourselves. And then I really explained to them, if you look at it, take each one of those rappers that everybody held as being the greatest and sold the most records and things like that. You're talking about Tupac and Biggie. How many people died because of the little idiocy and things that was going on between those two? But ain't nobody else got killed over LL Cool J song. So the music, the message and things like that, we know obviously that record companies do that deliberately because they know they're dealing with people that's been trained to believe a certain type of way, that that's a cultural norm for us to talk with the infamous N-word and the debasing each other and things like that. That's a hot commodity. You know, think Jalam AC got a poem out there about something like that. They're on YouTube. It hits home a lot. But I just want to jump into something else that y'all were just discussing in regards to the churches and the household and things like that. I think everybody could play a part, but we just need to embrace a different philosophy. Some of the philosophy we've been embracing over the last 50 years, sometimes certain things die out and it gets old. You can't use what the path is used. We can't use sometimes the civil rights workers use, we have to change with the times, you know. And I say that because we firmly believe that violence has been misdiagnosed in this country. It's not a criminal justice matter anymore. It's a health matter when it comes down to our community. And we have to start approaching it from that level. And if we approach it from a different level, I think we'll see different things change in our community instead of just relying on the criminal justice system to lock people up and throw away the key. We need to start treating this thing like it's an epidemic and look at it from that position. And in position of health, and I think it's more important than looking at things that we used to do back in the 60s or 70s, whatever, that we got to move with the time. Because depression ain't never let up, just be realistic. And particularly in our community, depression ain't never been let up. And in the last 60, 70 years, or more, you know, way more than that, in regards to politics and things like that, it never let up on our community. So I think we need to take a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say, J.C. Cage, in regards to the art that's being created now and what type of effect it is having on our young people?
It has a lot of effect.
Oh.
Go ahead, bro.
I agree. I think it has a tremendous effect. That's very interesting because that's one of the things young folks tell me all the time. oh, man, this music plays a big role in what we see, you know, the visualization of this and that and what we read, and, you know, it plays a big role. And I think, you know, the media the images that they show. I work with a lady, and she does something called media literacy. And she talks about how many images of alcohol sales you see before you're old enough to drink, or how many times you see a pistol, or how much violence you see. And she breaks it down, the statistics. And when you really think about that as a conscious person, as somebody that's just being thoughtful, and then you share that information with maybe somebody who don't know, just like Sankara was just saying. I was talking to them about it on a social issue, a social level, and they was like, what do you mean? Like, you know, we got to start using the creativity in a way that is going to be effective in more than just filling our pockets and making us popular. We got to use creativity in a way, if you will, that is a healing process, because that's how it's always been used. That's why people can say music is not local, it's a universal language. I don't need to know what you're saying. I could just feel the vibe. And that is real all the time, anywhere, you know, whether you're playing music in Africa or you're playing music in Asia or you're playing music in Europe or you're playing music in America, it doesn't really matter. People pick up on vibes, and they pick up on, they might not know exactly what you're saying. They might need to decode it, but I think we got to get back to the point where, you know, there's some of us that understand that we have different voices. And so everybody's not going to get to Jay-Z status or Biggie status or Nicki Minaj status or, you know, Rihanna status. But at the same time, we have people that have messages in the music, and it seems like every time those messages come out in the music, the first thing people say is, don't preach to me. I don't want you preaching to me. I'm here to enjoy myself. You can't walk and chew gum at the same time. You can't listen to music and get a message at the same time? And, yeah, I think we do have to have a different approach. I think that creatively plays a big role. And I think that until we start understanding that, and when I say we, I'm talking about society, until we start understanding that, you know, or until it hits home for people and becomes personal for people, and people don't want to hear it, but creativity plays a big role in the mind state. And like Sankar just said, it's a health thing. This is about health. In a minute, I asked my daughters the other day, I said, if a young black male dies every 28 hours in America, what's going to happen to a generation after 10 years?
They
said, ooh, right. So let's start thinking about it as a survival thing, as more than just, you know, that's that neighborhood. It don't have nothing to do with me. So creativity plays a big role in all of that.
So before we go any further, let me bring in the caller that's been so patiently on the line. Thank you so very much for holding on the line. I know that we're going to be taken in a very, very deep direction, but I love you so much, Timothy Hollins, Lost Soul. Thank you so much for tuning in to and calling in to the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Well,
how are you?
All right.
It's good to be here. I just wanted to put a little input, you know, add a little input on the subject. With the creative art that we're talking about, I feel like, you know, everything starts, you know, self-improvement, you know, starts with self-reflection. And with that being said, you know, what are we talking about, the kids or, you know, the adults of our generation? Whatever, we have to pretty much start with self. And once we are awakened, mentally awakened, because for years we have all been conditioned in one way or another. As far as conditioning with our definition of what is success, what is love, what is failure, you know, we've been conditioned to these terms, and until we wake up mentally and redefine what these things mean in our life, and only then can we pass these things on to our kids and help them understand, you know, everybody's not going to be saved, because, like, just in the world, just people in general, they have different mind states. some people, you know, like, I think we all get so caught up in we're going to save an entire planet, an entire race, when that's not the case, and especially, like, with black people. I wrote in my paper recently that the mechanics of a nigga, and people get offended by that word, nigga, and for some reason, we act as if black people, we use that word, we have been conditioned throughout time. You know, we all know the origins of it. We all know about, you know, I could address eugenics. I could address, you know, like the theology I could bring in a theology of time. I could bring in, you know, like Mussolini. I could bring in Lenin. I could bring in Stalin. I could bring in Hitler. I could bring in all of these different components, you know, whatever. But, and it all the dots kind of connect to one thing, the colonization of a race. You know what I'm saying? To depopulate a race. You know, and it all boils down to individual, you know, like will. So whatever situations that we have been placed in, you know, we could all name these different situations. We still have individual will, you know, to choose, you know, whether we're going to go left or right, whatever, even a lab rat who shot treatment, you know, where he should travel, you know, he still has that will to go left or right. Conditioning the mind is a very powerful thing. You know, we talk about, you know, like to depopulate an entire race or whatever, and that's, you know, on a grand scale, you know, a lot of the quote-unquote elite. And, you know, as far as the Marvin Sayers and these people of the time, of the generations, the COINTEL programs that have been put into place, and we could all understand that. But what I believe is that we have to, the word, you know, you focus on certain things, and I'm talking about a mentality now, as far as, you know, like you're starting with self or whatever, and self-improvement. So when I address, like, that particular word, and the way we use it now, you know, it's thrown around so much. We use it now. You know what I'm saying? That's why, you know, as if it could be actually used in a positive light, which it really can't, but that's the way that black people have came along and embraced that word as just positive people. But that's why that is not a representation of our culture. That does not represent us. That word is pretty much used as an adjective now, as the way a person acts, as opposed to a person. So it cannot be ascribed to a race. Anybody could be that, you know, because this is well as anybody could be a clown, anybody could be a fool, anybody could be a murderer. But we as black people, we have embraced the term. We let that term affect us and define us, but it don't. It's not define us. No more than 30 killer goes out and kills somebody. We have what is called we deal with what is called collective injury. Whereas opposed to where, like, when one black person does something, that affects us. Like, that defines who we are. You know, when you have, like, a Charles Manson killing somebody, I don't think that white people are black. They're not concerned with that. It's just a fool. See, the clown is a psychotic person. You could go into the, you know, like, the post-traumatic dealing with like the post-traumatic slave mentality, and you could, you know, like, you could attribute all of these things, like with the Willie Lynch, letters, and you could tie in all of these things, but in actuality, it all boils down to, like, self and the old saying of, you know, it takes a village. So once we start with ourselves and look at ourselves and realize that we have so many faults in ourselves, and then we try to, like I said, again, redefine. But different terms or different things in our life, we have to redefine, recondition our own mind before we can help someone else out. You know, like you say, you know, like sweep in front of your front door before you go try and sweep in front of somebody else's. And once we do that, you know, like that, just that positive energy will be seen, and you could, only then can you help someone else. You know, so again, we talk about the failure of the schools or whatever, but schools, the teachers, they are only equipped with so much, because a kid is going to be a kid, you know, and all of this I address, you know, in some way in teaching, but a kid is only going to be a kid best with all of us. We do what we're allowed to do. If we know that we could go to school as a kid and not have any consequences for our actions back at home, when we get back home, then we're going to go to that school. The teachers can only do so much. We can start with church. Church is only it's only an institution. It's only a house. The institution of church is good, but what builds up the church are people. And people will be people. People are going to be different. You won't have, like, hateful people. You won't have joyous, spiritual people. You know, like, how can the – when you go into the church, if you're lost looking for answers, that's wrong. To me, that's the wrong place to be. You know, you need to, like, self-reflect. Look at yourself, you know, join – because the ultimate goal of church is for you. They always tell you, only you can get you in heaven. Me as a preacher, I can get you in heaven. So you have to have your connection spiritually with God. We can look at the church and we can like blame a lot of different things, you know, to me. We can, you know, but it's somewhat making an excuse and pacifying some group of people, not a whole group of people, not people as a whole, but certain people just like mean-spirited by nature that has what I call a warped sense of reality. And we recognize these group of people and realize that they are just as well as they're going to be good. If we believe in church and the light and dark, day and night, we're going to have bad, you know, evil and good. And everybody, no matter what race the person belongs to, everybody's not going to be good. And that's the bottom line. So what we could do, we separate ourselves from that particular group of people with that mindset, because some people even when presented with the truth, the light, they don't care. They have an amoral mind state. They don't care. It's not that they don't know. They just don't care. And we all have encountered those people. Everything cannot be attributed to this person, man. We have many years of slavery and blah, blah, blah. Everything can't be attributed to that. A lot of it can, but some of it can't. And you know what I'm saying? With the music, we could teach. We can teach you. You look at the disconnect. I addressed that in my paper, the disconnect that a whole entire generation has. In the 90s, we all followed hip-hop in the, you know, like the late 80s, early conscious movement for, you know, like being proud with it, because that generation of people was so connected to their parents. Their parents went through a struggle through the Jim Crow times, through, you know, like just all of these different times, just the civil rights time. So many people passed on to them, but what have we passed on to our children? Our children, you bring up certain people in history, we're expecting a school system to teach our children about our history, when the school system won't even tell the truth about their history. We still have, in 2014, people celebrating Columbus Day, as if he really founded something. They teach you that the pilgrims, that there were some pilgrims that came over here and talked with the Indians and made peace, when these people were no more than tyrants that came and destroyed a whole group of people. But so how can we expect them to tell the truth to our kids about our history when they won't even tell the truth about their own history? So again, all of it, you know, I'm not going to be long-winded about this, but all of it, to me, it boils back down to self-reflection to self-improvement. And once we self-reflect and look at ourselves and we recondition our way of thinking and redefine particular aspects in our life of what is important, what is not important, not what society said is success or happiness or whatever the case may be, we redefine it individually and individualize these particular things, then only then can we self-improve and use that positive energy to move forward. Those are my thoughts on this particular subject.
Well, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, Tim, because I think that, you know, they're very, very valid. And I think that you're right. A lot of it comes down to self-reflection. I don't think that, of course, everybody who's on the panel, who's on the phone right now are African-American. And you know, besides myself. And so I understand, if we go in a direction where we talk about a certain group of people, in this case, African Americans. You know, for me, it goes beyond all of that. And I talk about mindset a lot, my own self. And you, my dear friend, Lasso, you help me with my own attitude at times, and you always let me know that, you know, you're supportive of who I am and what I do and that you're here for me. And I'm very, very lucky to have that. And in that, I say that because it helps, you know, me with my self-reflection. It helps me in being able to identify what direction that I want to go, I need to go when it comes to certain, you know, challenges that I'm faced. You know, when I thought about doing this show with J.C. Cage, you know, I actually took the time this morning and I prayed and meditated on it because I knew that it was an important topic. I wanted to go smoothly. I wanted a variety of perspectives to be shared and to be respected, and I feel that we've done exactly that. If I'm hearing from what you're saying, Tim, that, you know, I think it comes back to, in a sense, what, you know, what has been stated. It starts at home. It starts in the beginning of life. It starts in like J.C. Cage was saying, you know, in celebrating our young people in how we choose to raise them, you know, with morals and values and, you know, the type of guidance that we give them. You know, we can't expect the school system, you know, to raise the children. I think it's important for all families to understand their history, because the history of who we are individually as a family helps us understand, you know, who we are presently and where we go in the future. And so am I correct in how I was hearing you, Tim?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. I agree with you know, everyone on the panel, you know, as far as, like, the things, because there's no, I don't think that there's, like, a one particular conclusion, you know, like, anybody could be so, like, conclusive or one particular answer. I think that, you know, it takes everybody to come together collectively, you know, and discuss this, like, what's going on now and just throw around ideas, you know, because, you know, like, ideas, and hopefully these ideas could be taken, you know, and used, and not just, like, you know, just seen as just rubberish and just actually used and applied. And once you apply these, you know, everybody's ideas, you know, what do you, you know, some you won't agree with, some, you know, like, you agree with, but you take out, that's with anything in life, you take out what you can use and you apply that for the betterment of yourself, and you better yourself, and people around you, I feel like, can feel that positive energy, and they will want to better themselves. And with that being said, that's just a growing process, and that those people, you know, they could use that same energy, people around them, and sooner or later you'll have a whole community of people that want to better themselves. So what everyone is saying, I agree with what everybody is saying, because, like, we all, there's no one definite answer. There's, like, with everything that's being discussed and all the solutions that's being offered, you know, I think we can use them all. That's how I feel.
Definitely, and you're right. I think that there's a variety of ways that we can address it. There's so many ways that we can interpret what's going on, whether it's our own families, whether it's, you know, in our communities, whether it's in our churches and the schools, whatever. I think there are so many things that can be touched on, and I knew that this particular show was going to go by very, very quickly. And so I do think that, you know, if everybody is wanting to, I think that, you know, we need to continue having this conversation. But now that we've addressed, you know, what some of the concerns are, why don't we talk about what some solutions might be? Everybody who is on the phone right now are all creative souls. Timothy Hollins is an author, as he was talking about. He has just recently written a paper that is available on It's actually available on Amazon, and I purchased my copy. I have not read it yet, so don't spank me yet, but it's called Mechanics of Enigma, and I really, really would challenge you. It's not what we would call a book, per se, but it is something that he has researched. He's put a lot of thought into, and I think it's something that anybody would really, really gain and value the experience of reading this particular paper. He's also an author of Sacred Grounds, and he's an amazing spoken word artist. At times, you will hear me play pieces by him, hip-hop pieces that he has done, and he's out of, well, the Atlanta, Georgia area. And then we go into Sankara Dredon, who is out of Springfield, Illinois, also known as a spoken word artist out there, also has been known as doing some hip-hop, too, with Son of Man. You know, going into J.C. Cage, my business partner up here in Seattle, Washington, one of the well-known MCs out here, conscious hip-hop. He's out of the group known as Black Stacks or Silent Lambs Project. And then going into Quiet Storm of Spoken Word, an amazing, thoughtful man, spoken word artist. He's got a book out also, Expressions of Thought. And so I appreciate all of you being a part of this show today. You're from different regions of the United States. You have different styles of creativity and art that you share with the world. And I definitely want people to get to know you. We've got like 30 minutes left in the show. So I wonder if we could just kind of go down the list and give your thoughts on what you think is an immediate resolve that people could get involved in. And so I'm going to start with you, Quiet Storm.
One of the things that people can do is quit talking about things and be about action. What has become one of the things I've noticed throughout the years is people have become too dependent on the status quo or the government programs that are out here. We have enough resources in each of our communities. Some communities we have obviously a whole lot more resources, but if people would get beyond race, if people would get beyond class and look at the problem not as just a cultural problem or a class problem, but a worldwide problem, because everybody is being affected by it one way or another. Just as it was discussed earlier when it comes to shootings in neighborhoods. Okay, that's not only happening in the so-called urban or poor communities. It's now happening in suburbia. So what we need to do is come together as people in these different communities and come up with programs that help people. One of the things that I'm working on with another spoken word artist, hopefully we can get started sometime this year, is building a national chain of community centers that provide the services that a lot of people can't afford and the services that the government doesn't provide. So therefore, there won't be any excuses anymore as far as why this person can't get this particular job. Because one of the biggest problems is there's an economic chokehold on people, and a lot of it does have to do with race and class because, and I say it like this, a lot of people of color are being shut out of certain jobs because of racial prejudice and bias. So therefore, we're not able to go ahead and do what we need to do to take care of our families. So you have the continual cycle of poverty that's still there, and the cycle is getting stronger. The cycle is not going to break anytime soon unless we do something different, unless we get away from that status quo that is still here. Because with the cycle of poverty, you got people who are in modes of desperation. So you're going to have that continual flow of young kids going out here on the street corners thinking they can go ahead and sling that dope for that quick dollar. But in actuality, that quick dollar can end up taking their lives. So that's something that definitely has to change. We have too many people that are about self.
Right.
And as long as that continues, we're going to continue to have shows like we have any day. I would like to see things change to the point to where we don't have to have these shows.
I agree.
But when it comes to what needs to be done, that's one of the things that needs to be done. Second thing is we need to get together again as a whole, as a nation, and let our voices be heard about this crap that's being put on mainstream media. Because one of the most popular shows on mainstream media is this reality show, Love and Hip Hop in Atlanta, which is one of the most ignorant shows that could ever be on television. It is one of the most stereotypical ignorant displays of what people perceive black people to be like. And here's the kicker. These people happen to be extremely wealthy. So now you got this image that's portrayed to our younger people that it's okay to act a fool, because you can act the fool and still have serious bank. So now you got the mainstream media, and I'll say it like this, it's the racist, biased mainstream media that's pumping this stuff out here to go ahead and keep the minds of young people twisted so they can go ahead and fall into that trap of thinking, acting like caged animals is okay, because you can do that and still make bank. But the reality is, that's not going to happen. So,
you know, it's interesting that you said, not to cut you off, but it's interesting that you talked about, you know, the mainstream media and all of that. And it's so funny because, well, it's not funny, but the people that I communicate with, of course, they're all against, you know, what's taking place on mainstream radio to what's taking place on, you know, television, like you say, with the reality shows. The sad thing is obviously somebody is paying attention. If we were to stop paying attention to the nonsense and the crap, it wouldn't exist. They would move on to something else. But as long as there are the numbers out there that's paying attention, it's going to continue. And so, man, I wish that we could get the numbers to just say enough is enough and stop buying into all of that, because I agree, it gives our young people the wrong image. You're right. These people have money. These people are doing well as far as money goes, but you can see they're not doing well when it comes to the mentality of how they handle life, because it's just full of negativity and drama. So let me go to Sankara Dredon, because I know that he needs to get back to work, and I just wanted to just check in with you, Sankara, to see if you wanted to say anything before you leave.
Oh, yeah. Well, all I can say is that we just have to be more consistent, whether we're doing it is a part of our job or whether we're doing it as a volunteer. I just think we got to be more consistent with what we do. As far as what I do with my team up here, each one of the outreach workers have to have a minimum of 15 participants that's of the highest risk in the community. And we stay in contact with them, because according to the Cure Vinus model, we have to contact them by face 3 times in their home, 3 times on the street, and 2 times by phone. And that's consistency to ensure that you're not going to be out there doing anything that you shouldn't be doing. And at the same time, we plug them into supportive services through the Urban League, whether the GED program. We have partnerships with Lincoln Land College in the area, construction programs, computer banks, and things like that. We plug them to as many resources as we possibly can, and we have a motto. You know, we're not getting out your life until you change your life. That is the way it is. That's how we do it.
That's wonderful. Sankara, can you tell people where they can find out more information about your organization?
You can just Google career violence and you'll see it, but we just in Springfield chapter, there's actually a lot of them. They actually even opened up a site in Africa. They opened up a site in Honduras, and I wouldn't want to work there. They have 41 murders a day over there, so I will quit. You can just Google career violence. I mean, that's a real quick history. I mean, when they created this thing called Ceasefire, we trying to get up out the name Ceasefire and move it towards career violence just based upon the health of approach, and we know there's a lot of funding could be done through the help approach and the educational approach to be able to help our community and things like that. And this Ceasefire name has been tarnished a little bit because, you know, anybody that deal with nonprofit organizations know that you work a certain amount of time and they might cut you off to get refunded. And a lot of brothers in Chicago, which took the big hit, 600 of them was arrested during the layoff for going back into their old way of life and, you know, selling drugs and things like that. So it took a big hit. I mean, you had guys with Ceasefire t-shirts on selling crack at the same time, you know. So we try to get up out of that. Yeah, so we try to get up out of that name, you know, and just change it to career violence from a health approach, you know, because wordplay is real crucial. It's a vital thing to way people, you know, understand it, what we're trying to do and look at it from that approach. And, you know, and that's what we pretty much going on.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate you, Sankar, for taking the time out and participating in the show. I value you so much, and I'm so proud of everything that you're involved with. So I try to tell you that privately, but I want to tell you that publicly also. And, you know, I'm here to support you in any way that I can in what you're doing through your organization. And I love you very, very much, my friend.
Love you too, Flav, and I appreciate all you brothers on the panel. I enjoyed it today. It's been a long time coming, but I'm missing the radio shows with the family. Though y'all be easy. I gotta go.
All righty. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right. So I'm gonna go to you now, JC Cage, and you know, what are your thoughts in regards to what we can do right now? What can we, you know, whether you want to say Seattle, Washington, whether you want to say nationally or globally, what could we do right now to start making a difference?
Well, I think first off, I want to say that there were some very key things hit on today, and it's just a start. It's just the beginning of a conversation that has to move into some action. And I like a lot everybody on the panel had to say, you know, we don't all have to be in agreement 100%. We have to take some action, and I think that's the first thing in the movement is that we got to take action, and this conversation is a form of action. So I like the self-reflection piece. I think self-reflection is very big. I think where you start, you look at yourself and how you value yourself, then in turn turns into how you play out your life, how you then act, how you then deal with others. I think survival is real. I think they're trying to survive by any means necessary sometimes, whether it's talking about anti-violence and you're out there selling drugs, or whether it's preaching the gospel and you're out there turning your nose at somebody who don't look like you or look the way you expect them to. Words are power, but I think action is even much more important. So I would like to see, like my brother, I think it was Quiet Storm that said, let's build a coalition. Everybody don't have to jump on board at one time because they're not. All movements of power have never been the most popular movements when they started. But I do believe at the same time that a movement is necessary. So I would love to see the coalition. We talking about North Carolina. We talking about Illinois. We talking about Georgia. We talking about Washington right now. And these brothers all seem to be active participants, not just in the communities, but in the humanity of what's going on in the world. And they care more than just about themselves. So I would like to see the conversations continue. I would like to see a coalition built of those that care. Those that don't, maybe it hasn't affected them like they think it should yet. Okay, we understand that. But at the same time, don't criticize our movement. Don't criticize our consciousness. Don't criticize our responsibility to these young people, because these young people have a right to be great. And like I always say, Flav, I tell all the young people I meet, all the young people I talk to, you have a right to be great. Now let's figure out how we can reach that or unlock that greatness. So in that, I'd like to say I honor all you brothers. I honor you, Flav, for starting this conversation, for facilitating it, for having the courage to do something different and not just have a show about celebrating me or you or somebody else, but about celebrating our youth and their survival. And may all the prince rest in paradise. Hopefully they didn't die in vain. And those that went before that set a path for us, hopefully they didn't die in vain either. Let's get back to the survival of a community, and if we can use creativity, let's do it.
Thank you so much, Jace. I honor you, too. I honor everyone that's on this phone. I honor everyone who's been hanging out on the phone lines with us, to those that have been in the chat rooms with us. You know, some great, thoughts are being shared in the chat room, and, hopefully I can, if nothing else, can copy them and, share them online for everyone. I want to thank Field Man to guest 1855. There were some other guests in the chat room, of course, Quiet Storms in the chat room with them, Black Flight in America. I don't know if you guys are these are code names, and I should know who you guys are, but thank you so much for hanging out with us today. This means a lot to me. I think that for me, when I think about, what can be done, I'm just going to keep it simple, and then I'm going to go to my dear, dear friend, Timothy Hollins, a.k.a. Lost Soul. For me, I'm a grandma. I'm a mom. You know, I started as a younger mom and taking in teens into my home. You know, not getting paid anything. Their mothers and fathers just, in a sense, relinquished them to me. And, one young man lived on my couch from the age of 16 to the age of 18, I think a lot of it came from the foundation that my mother and father and my godmother, created in my world, in being able to make a difference, even in a small way, even if it's for one person. So I think about my grandchildren, and I had my granddaughter, with me last week, and she created things with, blue and green sparkles. She made a Seahawks flag. We went to the park and threw rocks in the lake. We went swing, and played on the swing set, and what I really thought about after the fact is I gave her time, and she wanted it. And I think that that's one of the things that we can start in doing, something really, really simple and really paying attention to our own children, the children in our families. If you don't have children of your own, if you're an auntie, if you're a godmom, a godfather, an uncle, a adopted, member of a family, I'm sure that there's some youth and young person, even an elder in your home and your community, your family, that you can just listen to. My dad is turning 92 next month, and I thank God that he's still with me. I thank God that he's still healthy, and I listen to him, and he thanks me all the time for having him with me. And I think that just even letting our elders know that they matter and that we value them. My daddy was a great man in the community as a religious leader and as a community leader. And I gained that from him. And so in many ways, I see the characteristics even within my children. So I am going to say time with the babies, let them know that they matter, praise them. I know it's just easier sometimes to scold and discipline, but praise them. You'd be surprised at how their eyes light up. I know you as creative souls, your heart just soars when somebody says, man, Jace, I love that show that Black Sax did, at the Triple Door, or Timothy, when somebody reads one of your pieces to, Quiet Storm, when, you do I Remember, or whatever, and somebody responds and reacts to what you create. It makes you feel good. Our babies feel the same way. And so I'm going to say it starts at home and it starts with our own children. So now, my dear friend, Lost Soul, a.k.a. Timothy Hollins, what are your thoughts and what can be done immediately to make a difference?
I feel that first we have to, you know, mentally, again, I feel like we have to mentally wake up. And what I mean by this is I feel that we need to first acknowledge that there is a problem. And once we acknowledge that there is a problem or problems, you know, plural, that we need to define the problem. And only in defining the problem can we find a solution or solutions. And some of the solutions, again, I think the immediate result is us waking up mentally. And like the brothers and you have said, that we need to come collectively and just exhaust the resources that we all have. Like one of the things that we all, most people haven't come to, just the spirituality and people pouring to the churches and from all different backgrounds, having different, in different parts of the workforce. And we could use these, and instead of the church being open on this particular day, let's open the church doors every day. And we have these different, you have teachers, lawyers, you know, doctors, business entrepreneurs, you know, whatever the case may be. And we could use these days not in ways to be beneficial monetarily, but just to help with these young brothers and sisters or older people or just people in general, and educate them or mentor them in whatever our field of expertise is. You know, sometimes people just want a listening ear. They just want to be heard. So you could have somebody there throughout the church, you know, to Monday or Wednesday or whatever day, any day, and just to listen, where you could have, you know, like respectable, you know, teachers that people, kids might be failing in school, they're too ashamed to raise their hand in the classroom, or they could use these particular times or after school or whatever the case may be, you know. But we have to awaken mentally, and only when we awaken mentally, you know, I'm not going to just continue, but my solution is just awaken mentally, you know, and to recognize that there is a problem, and then to define the problem. And once we define the problem, then I think that we could all start working on a solution and just support each other, because so many times throughout, just on the social media, you know, we post, people post, you know, like just a bunch of buffoonery, like the brother was saying earlier, the these reality shows, Real Housewives of Atlanta or whatever. I'm not gonna just, you know, like just target one particular show. I think all of them are shows that really kills the brain cells, because there's nothing of substance that they are discussing. And to project these images, you know, every day, you know, or throughout the week, or, you know, days turn to weeks turn to months turn to years, and over time, again, we're working at conditioning a mind. And once you condition that mind, you know, like you fall victim to these ideas, these ideologies that these people are projecting. So until you wake up mentally and start self-reflecting and define what's wrong, and then can we work towards a solution.
I agree. I think that self-reflection is very, very important. I'm going to ask this, Tim, of you, and then there is somebody else who's raised their hand that wants to come into the show. But I'm finding that there are people who just lie to themselves. You know, there are people that don't see that in many cases they are their own issue, and they choose to blame others. And so when we talk about, you know, identifying and self-reflection and all of that, how do we get people to just really be honest with themselves?
I think that will only come from, you know, honestly, I believe that only comes from divine intervention. That's what I was addressing, you know, a little bit earlier, as far as mm-hmm. Some people, you know, just by nature, you know, you've heard the, you said, I mean, one of the most important things you just said, well, I'm not going to say the most important thing, but the most important thing that you just hit on, as far as dealing with self-reflection, I think one of my favorite adages, you know, I even included that in the little paper that I wrote, is you can't get into a bar fight if you don't go into a bar. So even, you know, even if you go into the bar and you're sitting minding your own business, you're doing whatever, you know, this, that, and some fool comes over and starts some type of physical altercation with you, you know, you could cry and you could say, oh, you know, I did nothing wrong, and da 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 da. And all of this might be true, But what you actually did, you still could find fault within yourself because you actually placed yourself in an environment that heightened
right.
the risk of a physical altercation. So if we could have this type of mindset to realize that no matter, like, all these different circumstances, we still at fault for some for most of the things that happen. You know, but there are some people, again, that I said that have, like, amoral mind states. You have some
mm-hmm.
people that know that their mirror neurons does not, you know, flash on and off like a normal person does. You know, that region of the brain that produces, like, the mirror neurons, that they don't flash on and off. So they have no empathy. They have no kind. They don't really care as a normal person or a quote-unquote normal person would care. So these type of people, you know, like, there's nothing that I could do. There's nothing that there's a million and one books written, you know, in addressing these particular issues. But when it all is said and done, I think, you know, my personal belief is to take divine intervention. Because when you got a person that just doesn't care, even after, you know, it's a big difference. You always hear the big difference between being ignorant and being stupid. Ignorance is that you're not knowing. That's why a lot of people, they say, you know, ignorance is bliss, because I would rather not know. If I don't know, then I don't have to make a change. So I would rather
right.
not know. I would rather stay in that state of confusion and lostness, as opposed to entering the matrix and being awakened to all these numbers and all these things. But stupidity is once you know. You're not, you know, once you have learned these particular things and you still continue to do these things, you know, neglecting the fact that you have learned. So you're not ignorant anymore. You know. So, you know, once you have a stupid person, you know, there's really nothing. It's not that they don't know. They just doesn't care. They do not care. So I really don't think. I think that we have to reach out to the ones that are hungry. And we have to, like, you know, like my brother said, form a coalition to address these type of issues and reach these type of people, you know, that does care. And maybe being with that particular movement, we could save so many. I feel like if you save only one person in your life, you live your life. So
right.
once we all, you know, we start and we, you know, we could reach out and touch one brother, one sister, I feel like we've done our job. But hopefully we could touch the masses.
I agree, and I thank you for that, Timothy, and I thank you so much for the paper that you've written and all that you do, and I appreciate you as being my friend, you know, for being in my corner. Oh, my goodness, I don't even know how many years now, you know, over 5 years, and, you know, supporting who I am and what I do, and, you know, and I think that attitude is everything. I think that we do need to check ourselves. And hold ourselves accountable, you know, for our own actions and for our own thinking. I think sometimes that we can change the way that we think about some things, and once we're able to do that, it's interesting how, you know, life can definitely, you know, take a different turn in how, you know, in just our own attitudes being shifted. For those of you that are listening to the show live, it's going to fade out live online here in just about 5 minutes. So I do encourage you, if you'd like, to call into 347-857-1189, and you can listen online because it will record going into the archives, what is called the archives. But I'm going to take in another caller. Just so they can share their thoughts before the show actually stops being able to be heard live. Caller from the 206-251, welcome to Flava Marlix Radio.
Okay, well, I called in because I wanted to thank you, Mom, for being such an instrumental person in my life when I was a young person making very bad choices. So, you know, it's like, I just remember being young and not having a great home life, and you were a person who said, hey, you can come and stay at my house as long as you need until you can get yourself on your feet and make better choices. And, yeah, I just wanted to call in and say thank you.
Hi, Donnie.
Oh, and there goes your grandson in the back.
That Matthew?
Yes, it's Matthew.
Okay. So for those of you that don't know, this is Tomiko, and she's going to make me cry right now.
Oh, Mom. Okay.
But she is one of the teens that I took into my home. And, you know, and I appreciate you calling in and saying what you said, because, you know, Tomiko and Mariko, my girls, and Mariko is her son, EJ, and Matthew's, you know, godmother. And, you know, I think that it was something very easy to do, you know, to take you in, Tomiko, and to, you know, be another mom to you. I mean, you have a mom and a wonderful mom and a wonderful dad. And, you know, as, you know, there are challenges sometimes in life when it comes to our own parents, you know, just as Brittany and Mariko can say that about my own self. One thing that I will say is that, you know, sometimes we need, you know, that extra parent, you know, that may not be a biological parent or may not be, you know, a legal parent or whatever, to play a role and kind of help, you know, kind of cushion what's going on. And I'm proud of you, baby girl. You've grown into the most amazing woman and most amazing mom. And all the things that you do and how active you are in your son's lives, you know, that, you know, I'm just really excited, you know, to, you know, still play a role for you and to, you know, watch you grow into your own womanhood and to watch your children grow, which I can't believe that they're so big now, you know, but, you know, so that's, you know, that's just an example, you know, being there for a young person when they need somebody outside of their own family to say, hey, I see you and you matter. And I thank you for that, Tomiko, so very, very much.
Yeah, I mean, I want to touch on what he was saying. You know, it's like if you're around certain people that are acting a certain way, you are who you hang around. And I never understood that when my own biological mother, you know, or adopted mother told me that, and then now I do know that I was making bad choices because I wasn't getting myself away from the other people that were making bad choices. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, when I did get myself out of that, I started to, I guess, you know, grow into the person that I was meant to be. So I don't know. I've learned a lot. I'm a preschool teacher now, and I mean, I think that probably because being around you and you know, our housekeeper, Ella, and, you know, other people that really, you know, I choose to work with kids because I want to make a difference. I want them to have someone to look up to just in case their home life may not be, you know, all that they want it to be. So, you know,
right.
That's why I do what I do, because of, you know, people that have played a great role like you in my life. So I just wanted to call in and say that.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me ask you this, Tomiko, before you hang up. What do you think? Do you think that the music that's created out there, the art that's created out there, has an influence in what in how our young people perceive life to be?
I think that it does to a certain extent. I mean, some people's minds are, you know, stronger than others to know that, you know, that's not what real life is. I mean, you know, when you have sex and drugs and, you know, flashy cars and all this type of stuff on TV, these kids want it, you know. And who doesn't, I mean, to a certain extent, want, you know, more money or this and that or whatever. But the way that they're portraying it, you know, kids don't know that that's not what real life is. You know, real life is what we go through every day, going to work, you know, cleaning in the house, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to work for what you got. These people are not just getting these things, you know.
They're, right.
You know, they have to do a certain kind of work. But, I mean, I don't agree with all types of music. I do enjoy music. But, mm-hmm. I mean, for some, you know, I shelter my younger son, who's right here in the car with me, that, you know, I don't think he should listen to certain things. I'm not going to listen to certain things in the car with him because I think that it's
right.
inappropriate. His mind is going to wander and think that that's what he's supposed to be doing. You know,
right.
He's very impressionable. And, you know, and another thing, you know, I wanted to get in on this, you know, to listen to this radio show is because of the fact that, you know, I'm watching the news, like, 5 shootings, you know, in the city.
Right.
That's, like, insane. Like,
exactly.
It, you know, I used to hang out there, and I don't even feel comfortable bringing my kids or even driving through the city.
Right.
You know, I live in Puyallup because it's more affordable. And I'm not saying there's less violence, but there's not shootings like that. I don't feel like my kids are unsafe to walk down the street. You know, that's
right.
what I feel like, is that it's unsafe
right.
for us to even go hang out with family and anymore. So hopefully, you know, there is going to be more, you know, people are going to make it more, you know, available for kids to, you know, have programs and things to go to somebody to lean on or talk to, because there's so much violence going on. Heartbreaking.
Definitely, definitely. And the shootings here in Seattle, as you said, in the central area, and there's one that just took place up the street by Grocery Outlet, you know, last week, and then another one that took place over by Franklin at the Chevron as Grandpa and Brittany and I were driving down the street right after, I'm sure, it took place right after we drove past because we were in that area at that time. It kind of triggered Jason and I to do this particular show today because, you know, of just understanding, it's hitting a little bit close to home. And, you know, and what can we do to try to step up and make a difference? And just starting, if nothing else, today we started the conversation, and I'm very, very blessed in the people that participated in today's show. So, Jace, if you would, let me see. Jace, if you don't mind, would you just go ahead and close out the show for us today?
No problem. First of all, I want to thank everybody. And I mean this genuinely. I want to thank everybody that listened in, that was in the chat room, that was on the line, that tuned in today, whether you offered words or you just offered energy. Today is a special day because it's the first day in a long and many more days to come where the conversation and the actions will take place in survival of our young people. May God bless and continue to bless us as a human race, and look out for our communities and help us find ways to solve these problems that are so systematic and so problematic and so senseless, because we're losing so many beautiful souls and so many beautiful lives. And may we continue to keep our eye on the prize and focus on the things that are important, like family, like community, like life, and like the future. SEA, State of Emergency Alert. Just getting started.
All right. Thank you. As Jay said, thank you so much for tuning in today to our first show. I think we're going to continue the conversation at least maybe once a month, you know, and open up the show just like we did today to have some great conversations, meet some more people that are making a difference in their communities, and continue the conversations on the simple things that we can do to make a difference. And as my friend Timothy Holland said, you know, reflection, self-reflection is a place to start. As I'm going to say, embrace the babies, you know, embrace the children within your own homes, within your own families. And it can start as simple as, you know, just doing those two things. So take care, God bless, and stay tuned to more conversations taking place here on Flava Marlex Radio. All right, have a good day.
State of emergency alert!
Mm-hmm.